The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome back to Smell You Later, your favorite podcast about love.
About love. About love. It is about love, God damn it.
It's never not about love.
Exactly.
For better or worse.
That's what people miss about this show. I'm like, they're like, it's about perfume. I'm like, no, it's about the connections you make through scent.
That's
a log line.
That's the log line.
Put that on Apple Music. Anyway, I have spent the last week being bitter.
Why?
Because you went to the Givaudan thing and I couldn't go. So tell me about it. I saw you posting away.
I don't remember what I thought it was going to be, but it's literally, what are the new trends going to be in scent? And it's like the same presentation that they give clients, which is interesting to me because then I'm like, oh, okay, I'm a client. What would my oil house tell me if they were like, here's what we can do. Here's what we think is going to be the next big thing. And they said that when they do these presentations, I think like once or twice a year, that the clients like do take that into account with planning their next launches. So
yes, because more than half the time, the clients don't know what the fuck they're talking about. So they'll take their word for whatever.
The call is coming from inside the house.
Don't look at me. I'm just
saying, because like, you know, there's so much like storytelling and fragrance. Or like, this is inspired by this and blah, blah. I'm like, it was inspired by a deck from Givaudan. Like, let's be real. Yeah.
No, right. Exactly. I mean, being where we are in the industry, what did you think about it? Actually, don't answer that question, honestly.
Well, I do really enjoy smelling the accords and the captives that they make.
Totally.
I think that's the most interesting part to me. And, you know, they do beautiful stuff, obviously. And then they're like, okay, so we think that tea is going to be a big thing. Tea was one of the verticals of the next big trend. So they had an isolated mate absolute accord. They had a Hinoki. No, sorry. They had a Hojicha accord.
Ooh,
that was really good.
We've talked about Hojicha since.
Yes. And it wasn't straight up Hojicha tea, like freshly brewed tea. It had a little bit of sweetness in it, almost like a latte. So it was certainly like an accord and not just the isolate.
Sure.
They had a milky matcha accord, which of course we're going to see matcha continue to explode. And it's really funny because there was maybe 15 of us. And it was like me, Arabelle, Emma, and then a bunch of fragrance content creators that I was kind of familiar with.
Okay.
Because I was like, who is this for? Like, why are we here? But like, what is this meant to do? And I'm like, okay, this is like a trend report. Cool. Mm-hmm. There's new earthy accords, and it's funny because under the earthy accords, you know, they're talking about biobotanical, quote unquote, themes that combine earthy or green elements with, I don't know, like almonds or vanilla, something that adds warmth. They had a pandan accord that was so good.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Are they getting a little Asian with it?
They're getting very Asian with it.
Okay.
There's going to be a lot of Asian influence, like a lot of rice notes and stuff.
Huh.
Interestingly.
Am I allowed to say that?
No, it can be said. It can be said because it can be smelled. Like, it's like very evident.
Well, and it's true.
It's true. It's just true. Yeah. Fougères are going to be a big thing because they're like, the men's market is exploding. And I'm like, we're doing the gender thing again, I see.
Yeah.
Booze, alcohol, cocktail notes, milky accords, and then leather, which is interesting that leather was here now, but they're like, leather.
Who? Wait. Yes. So I agree with everything you said about like the trend report of it all. Mm-hmm. And because I may or may not have allegedly seen trend reports from, you know, another large oil house that rhymes with Squirminish. And it's like, I'd be looking at them and be sort of like, well, yeah. Not to say that I know everything or I know it all. That's definitely not the case. But it's just like, I think when you are approaching, it's interesting to me to be the oil house, you know, or be in the oil house and see these decks approached for an audience who is the mass market company. You know what I mean? So to us, sometimes I feel like, well, yeah, we've been talking about that for 2 years, but it's like this, that we is not the same we that they're selling to. So I always think that's interesting to see which direction the wind is blowing these things that we've already been on. You know what I mean? I would include matcha in that, but that's so cool.
What was funny is that we're in a conference room with a very long table, and all down the table are a bunch of kind of benchmark fragrances, some of which were Givaudan made, a lot of which were not.
Okay. That's cool.
Because I saw they had a bottle of Clue dandelion butter.
Fuck yeah.
I was like, wait, they didn't make this with Givaudan. The perfumer is the founder. Like, what? And that's their, I guess, what do you call it when you go to the market to see what's interesting as like a reference?
Like a benchmark, an audit.
Something like that. And then they also had Denom Mooncake, which I'm also like, wait, I don't think Denom is made by Givaudan.
Crazy.
And apparently they just be buying up all of Stell.
It doesn't shock
They're
me.
They're like,
though.
We love going to Stell and seeing what's out there. And I'm just like, you're like,
yeah,
Stell,
I bet you do.
Stell is literally just like informing the market now with who they stock. The power.
I mean, like, really, though?
Yeah.
I think it's very cool that I think we can zoom out and say that indie brands are in some ways dictating what the mass brands are going to do.
Because they take risks. It was interesting to say that it's always the indie brands that are the ones that'll do something more expressive and take risks. And it's the bigger mass brands that are like, tell us what the trends are and we'll do that.
Well, I guess I'd counter you with, to indie brands, it's not a risk, or it's much less of a risk.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they also have the audience that is hungry for that uniqueness. So what is a risk to, I'm just throwing it out there, philosophy is not a risk to Clue, because you know, the context is different. But that is so cool. Are we gonna have to cut any of this? Are we about to get a cease and desist?
Every person who was a fragrance content creator had little table stand with the phone tripod on the table in front of them.
Tripod. Yeah,
and they were just recording the whole time.
Right. Well, and then Givaudan, you can't sue us. You think we're cute?
I'm not a content creator, so I'm like, I do not know your ways, but I'm just like, wow, you guys.
We're not
just
a content creator. We are currently recording a podcast.
I don't call this content. I don't refer to what
this
I
is the
do
the long
as
form
content.
Content. Are you kidding me? This is the capital C content.
No,
we're
way.
Part of the machine too.
Content feels so like, what? I don't know. You could be doing anything. I could just be like farting on camera. That's content. Like,
please don't say that. Oh my god. God, this is a family
podcast. I don't know what this is, but it's not content.
Okay. All right. Whatever helps you sleep at night. Well, thank you, Givaudan, for hosting my biological sister at your fortress. I'm very jealous I couldn't go.
I know. I always want to just run amok in their offices and like go into the lab and be like, what's this?
Yeah. I mean, they probably let you know.
Maybe. Maybe. Anyway, Tynan, what do you smell like today?
I'm wearing a new fragrance to me from a new to me brand. I'm wearing Harvest Mouse by Zoologist. And this brand has been around for I actually don't know the different, I don't know the birth year, but I know it's been,
they've been around for a while.
Handful of years. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just kept seeing these fragrances and one of them jumped out at me. I don't remember why. I think it was because of a hay note. So I finally hit
Harvest
him up.
Harvest Mouse. That would make sense. Yeah.
And I'm wearing, I actually have two with hay notes and they sent them both to me plus a pretty girthy discovery set. So I'm excited to work my way through that. But Harvest Mouse is really interesting, really gorgeous, much more sort of like me coded than I expected it to be. Hay is what brought me to it, but there's a lot of storytelling copy on the website, which of course we applaud, but I'm just going to go straight to the notes. Actually, if I was just to smell this blind, I would say almost like anise and I don't want to say true licorice, but anise and warm summer air, which I think is the hay. And you know, the, like, those like spice drops or like gumdrops, but old men eat that are spearmint and licorice and orange something or other, sort of like that sort of spice, but in a really good way, in a way that I really love. It opens with bergamot, clove, chamomile, orange blossom. The heart is Divana, hay absolute, benzoin, apopamax, rose absolute, and beer extract, CO2. Ooh. And the base note, fir balsam, oak moss, cedarwood, sandalwood, Peru balsam, and vanilla. So a lot going on here. But really, you know, I wouldn't smell this and be like, hey, but whatever I'm smelling, I'm really, really, really into. It's a little, God, not sticky in the way that honey or amber can be sticky, but it's chewy, almost like I'm in a drawer that I shouldn't be in with some, I don't know, tobacco or something that your granddad puts in his pipe. I'm not sure, but it's sweet on top of that, but it's not sweet like, you know, everything I like is sweet. It's just round and really attractive and magnetic and spicy and beautiful. I love it. Harvest Mouse.
Ooh. I've been aware of Zoologist, but I haven't been that. I don't think I've really smelled many of their stuff.
If I could be, is this a place where I could be honest? It depends on the week.
It depends.
All of their, you may have gathered, all of their fragrances are named for an animal. And the packaging has an illustration of said animal on it. Call it a black and white oil pastel, maybe a pencil sketch. I don't know. I'm not really like storybook illustration animal tease. So I wasn't ever rushing to this brand because of that, but I've heard enough about them and people that I trust love them. Shout out Mishy Smells. So I was just like, you know what? It's time to bite the bullet and just figure it out. And I'm so happy I did. This is the first, look at this discovery set. So they sent me two of whatever ml this is, let's say 10, and then let's say 10 other fragrances in their discovery set. So I've got a ways to go, but I am really excited about what awaits me from Zoologist. So thank you, Zoologist. And please, please don't come at me for not liking your labels. I'm sure in a week I will.
So. I think your aesthetic favors, let's say, a little bit. Yeah, a little bit more abstract. I get it.
There's a person out there who would whack me for saying that, like, it doesn't matter what's on the bottle. Yeah, it does. It's a product. No, it's a brand.
Yeah.
And like, if the juice is invisible, then all you have to go on, the packaging in the bottle is an identity. You know, that does matter. If it doesn't matter to you, that's so great. Thank you for being fully realized and healed. I'm going to be petty and shallow. I want a cute bottle. But
no, I think that's extremely true. I think there's something in the visual aesthetic that draws people in or not.
But it's also helpful to remember that not everything is for everyone. Not everything has to be for everyone. I am not the consumer who's going to gag at a mouse. But I'm gagging at the fragrance. So I can admit when I'm wrong. Sable, what do you smell like today?
Oh, man. I doused myself in this scent at the Givaudan conference room because it was so good. And I don't know if I'll ever get it because it's very expensive. And that is Louis Vuitton Phantasmagory. Am I saying that right? Yes. Phantasmagory. Of course, it's like the fucking X-Trait. So it's like $600. How dare they? Mm-hmm. And it is their vanilla. And they specifically call out vanilla, ginger, and almond, which is true. But it smells like something so familiar to me. And I've been trying to put my finger on it all day. But it does have that charged static air quality to it that you and I both like.
Yeah.
I like went on the Louis Vuitton website to the product page and the description is just like, what are you saying? What are you on about? But the Fragrantica page is a little bit more succinct, thank God. Anise, ginger, almond, floral notes. Thank you for that. Vanilla and leather.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. Which it sounds really kind of heavy and quite opulent from those notes, but there's something extremely transparent and airy about this. It's like it has this kind of like gossamer veil that's like very textural. And I don't even necessarily think I would, if you didn't tell me there was vanilla in this, I don't think I would have been like, ooh, vanilla. But there's something very warm and comforting. It's almost like a warm, spicy musk with ozone injected to it.
Oh, shit. Okay.
It's so beautiful. and I'm never going to buy it.
Yeah, I've been wanting to smell this one because of the vanilla note specifically. Yeah. Those Louis Vuitton scents, God damn it, they are expensive. But most of them really do like work it out. I've smelled many of them. I own a couple, but it's not like, I don't know. I feel like we were just talking about what is the luxury brand that does the best fragrances. I think you pretty rightfully said Hermes. Mm. I don't know. I might not be fair to compare them, but who cares? Were we to go toe-to-toe, I think it would be a pretty strong bet. All that's to say, the Louis Vuitton fragrances across the board,
they're good.
Pretty much bang.
Yeah.
They're good, but they're expensive.
Stupid expensive. Why? I mean, I know why, but like, come on now. Yeah. Come on now, this isn't going to keep the lights on for you.
Well, and they have a couple tiers, the photo that you texted me had the big chrome architectural
the
cap.
Frank Jerry cap.
I was like, you're playing with fire. Anyway. Today, we are very excited. We are talking to a new fragrance brand called Dancing. It's actually a new fragrance and wine brand. We should have probably said wine first, but they are a mother-daughter duo who renovated and revived a vineyard out in Sonoma and then launched fragrances under the same name, hot on the heels of the wine.
Yep.
And I was actually just out in Napa, Sonoma area for a long weekend and it was really incredible. It's so, I hate how this sounds, but it's true that the pace of life out there is just different.
Yeah.
I mean, we had the loveliest, most beautiful time out there, but it did feel like being almost not in another time, but like someone turned the speed down 40%. I was like, do y'all have anywhere to be?
Sounds perfect for me.
Lots of wine, lots of hills, lots of sunshine. It was really incredible. I did not make it out to Dancing. We sort of tried, but it just didn't work out. But we were right there. So hopefully we get back out there again. But after having a little bit of a taste of wine country and a lot of wine, we're excited to meet the people behind the brand. We have both smelled the fragrances, like them a lot, and are excited to connect.
I am Lauren. I am the co-founder of Dancing, the daughter part of the duo. And I'm Cynthia Russell, the mother part of the duo. And we're so happy to be with you and excited to share our journey with you today.
Excellent.
We share the excitement. To get us started, we always like to ask our guests, what do you smell like today? And Cynthia, let's start with you.
I habitually love Gnarly Vines. It's my bridge to past and present. I grew up around these floral, earthy scents, and then Lauren and I together modernized the scent and made it sort of very today, very free, and very sort of expressive of our current life together. So I love to wear Gnarly Vines. I have it on now.
That's my favorite one.
Yeah, it's a popular one. Well, I started off my day smelling like scorched wood, and now it has a little bit of Midtown, a little bit of Subway, a little bit of Grand Central, but I've been loving Scorchwood lately. It's very wintry to me. It's like very milky, a little boozy. It's been freezing here, so it feels just right.
I think Scorchwood is my favorite. It is a toss-up, though, between all three of them, but especially between Torchwood and Gnarly Vines. I think that's a very tied and sable dichotomy of like smoke. Like figgy fresh. So that's awesome. So we would just like to get us sort of started off before we get into all things Dancing. We like to sort of understand like what fragrances were impactful to you throughout your life. And it can be anything. It doesn't have to be perfume.
Yeah, for sure. I can start with this one. So some of mine are perfume led, but for some reason, I feel like my grandpa's cologne was one of the most impactful smells for me. There's something about a grandpa cologne, and I feel like everyone has that experience, but
definitely
you can just like smell them before they're in the room, after they're in the room. It's super strong. And then also my dad, he used to spritz, I think it's Hermes, the orange one. He used to spritz it above our heads before we would sleep at night, and he would call it like the nighttime elixir, and he wouldn't let us go into bed until he came into the room and gave us our little dream potion. So those are two really, really strong, like childhood core memories for me.
That's so cute. I love that.
That is
cute. All the men were super fragrant in my life. Mine, I think, is more about a place or places. I grew up in Southern California in what's called the Inland Empire. When I was growing up, it was all orange lemon trees. And the blossoms were just very much part of my memory of life in California. And I guess from a fragrance side, my mother was a gardener. And so she and my father loved gardenias. We don't see them very much on the East Coast, but they love gardenias. And I remember the first time that my mom went to France, which is when I was in college studying there. She fell in love with Guerlain, the sort of white petal fragrance. I don't even know which one it was at the time. And for 20, 30 years, that's what she wore every day. Well, my mom always smelled like white flowers. And I don't know, that's embedded in my memory. And also, I think because France was such a kind of, I grew up in Southern California. I never traveled before. I studied abroad in college, and I got to go to France on a year abroad. And the scents of the chic Parisians, like walking the streets, like that very much is ingrained in my desire to be a part of that history and culture. And so I adopted Chance by Chanel, like really early on, and sort of went with it when it came out with its different colors, like pink, like green, whatever. But so, yes, I think I'm rooted very much in place and events in my life that, you know, there was a scent with a place that kind of controls my memory and my good times.
Okay, I have to add, though, because you're so tied to place. So her parents owned a diner in California, which I find to be like the most American California thing ever. And so... True. Don't take this the wrong way, but when I think of smells associated with you, I think of her favorite foods are like donuts and hamburgers. And I always feel like French fries and salt is so
true.
Part of your childhood as well. That's what I think about you.
Yes, flowers are great, but I would like salt. I would like make elegant and say it's the salt of the ocean of growing up.
Both versions of salt are good. All salty versions are good. And we love Chance on this podcast.
Yes,
so.
It definitely was thought of a lot when we were formulating Gnarly Vines. I wanted it to have a nod to tradition, but still be something really fresh and new and bright and evoke the vineyard, like the sun and the floral and fruit and earth of the vineyard. So it kind of seems to me, and I still think that it'd be an evolution, really, of sort of a...
I remember Chance was it was definitely like the hot girl scent when I was in high school and college, for sure.
I mean, I think I got that from you too. Like, I think it was my first fragrance too, just probably learning from you as one does with beauty, but I use it for a long time as well.
I mean, it is very timeless. So I guess like we sort of jumped the gun on this, but how, Lauren, you jumped in about her sort of scent memory and things like that. And Cynthia, you've already spoken about scent memories. We're wondering, is there a specific scent memory or more than one that you both share?
Yes. So I think obviously we spend a lot of time together now that we work together, and we spend a lot of time on the vineyard. One of our favorite times is during harvest, and there are a lot of smells, but there's this one really distinct smell of after they harvest the grapes and they're sort of trucking them back and forth. Like the farmers are going back and forth, and inevitably some fall off of the truck and they get crushed and sort of ground into the stone. And then the sun comes and sort of bakes them. And you get this almost grapey, fermented, almost wine smell. It's incredibly distinct to that time there and the process. It's a little bit like fermenting, like stewed fruit. And it's really yummy, but also a little yucky at the same time.
Like, yeah, it's a little dirty.
It's super interesting. I mean, I think of wine like that too. Like there's some notes that are just like earthy and gritty and some that are super sweet. And it's almost like it's got that almost like rotting smell that's like a little bit appealing, but also a little bit grotesque. And I think that to me is really iconic. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, both of us. And also there's a visual piece to it too that you can see this smashed purple on the asphalt. And it's like, this is so unique. This is so much here at this place and not something you can replicate. It's so authentic to the experience of being in wine country. And so I think for us, when we first bought the vineyard, which is just not that long ago, this seems so magical that it's hard to picture this, but
they use these plastic bins and they just jump on the road and the grapes fall everywhere. And it's like, oh, my grapes, you know, I'm missing some, but well, they're just used to it. They're so busy and they're doing it so fast and grapes are flying around and being smashed by.
I have like a funny like album on my phone of just grape roadkill. And like they become very artistic. There's some are just, yeah, it's fun. It's different. It's weird, but it's a good smell.
That's funny. I feel like there's this kind of romantic notion of vineyards and of orchards. And that reminds me the first time I went apple picking, you don't realize that the whole orchard just stunk of fermented apples because they fall off the tree, people step on them, and then they get baked in the sun. And it just like, it smells like boozy.
It's exactly that. Like you kind of get the precursor to wine, which is so fun. Mm-hmm. So
there's a pathway that we go for a run from our house and it's 2.5 miles back and forth. And on this is the main way that a lot of grapes are transported. And you kind of instantly get in a good mood. And that's why like wine and fragrance is like interesting. It's so mood generating. Just smelling the crushed grapes kind of start making you think already of drinking wine or smelling great things or harvest and the whole party of harvest and how everybody's having fun and smiling in the sunshine all the time. So it's also like, I don't know, it's just a really good feeling that you get.
Mm. Was that sort of the impetus behind dancing? I feel like the name is very joyous and celebratory.
Yeah, a little bit. I think my mom was a dancer in college. So there's part of it that's quite literal for us, but there's also a part of it that is inviting all of this sensory play and also riffing on the fact that the seasons dance and everything dances. And we joke that when people drink wine, they start to dance. And we have an art collection there. And we have this painting by Maggie Ellis called Other People's House Parties. She does a lot of fun figurative paintings, but it's really about people dancing kind of to their own rhythm. So being very individualistic in their preferences, but being able to do that together. Everything that we do, we talk about finding your inner dance and just letting people express themselves, but knowing that all of the products that we make are meant to invite like togetherness. With what we've extrapolated from dancing, and it's just like a fun universal like word. Everyone can do it.
Yeah, I just looked up Other People's House Parties. It's beautiful, and it also feels very like wine soaked, both in concept and color. Totally. You know,
she's great, and it's a friend and artist, and she is a big influence behind our labels, and just we love her, we love art. So,
but something I mean, Lauren can tell you like why it all came about was fairly random. I mean, it was a COVID related outcome, right? Mm-hmm. We thought we might all be living on a farm, you know, given that sort of moment. And we thought, oh gosh, we're going to live on a farm. Like, let's go to California and live on a grape farm. Wouldn't that be great?
And Dad wanted like livestock.
Yeah, he wanted livestock. Like, how can I pivot this family adventure? So we're all working from home, all living together, only able to go to upstate New York and say, I think we're going to need a farm. I'm like, oh, okay. Only farm I'll ever live on is
a wine farm.
And it was kind of a joke. And like life, as you know, everybody knew, like it was a moment that sort of changed everything. And we ended up buying this vineyard as a way to escape, really, and be together. We were spending so much time together. We thought, let's do this and let's do it in California where the weather's nice. We ended up just when picking a beautiful place, and we ended up in this very historic valley with this really storied grape history of the Zinfandel, like America's grape, like who knew? And it's all concentrated for 150 years right on this street that we're on with multi-generational families who built this whole industry. And we did not mean to make wine initially. It was going to be a family home. And then Lauren was in a transition after business school, and I asked her, you want to make a wine? And that's kind of how it started. And we went to courses at UC Davis online, and we hired people and decided this is very cool. And we can't let this historic property not be embraced and recognized. We can't let it die, you know, essentially. So we found out that one man owned it, and there were 70 years of grapes on the property.
That's incredible. So from there, we understand now how you sort of got to the vineyard, but then dancing. I feel like that's a backstory. Then what happened post that?
Yeah,
you know, like
pretty early after. So as you mentioned, we took over the vineyard. Historically, they were selling off the grapes, and we were just like, hey, why don't we try something here? And want, of course, the first thing that came to mind. So we began to do that and had pretty immediate traction, because thankfully the terroir does a lot of the work. So we built this amazing brand around it, but luckily it is such an agricultural product and we have a strong idea of what we want and the earth just generates that. But from there, we were like, how do we kind of bottle up this experience in a different medium? And the idea for the fragrance was born pretty much in tandem. There wasn't much time between the two, because we knew we wanted to share it further and push the boundaries, I think, of what a wine brand could be. And I think that comes back to why dancing and the name and all of those things. A lot of the vineyards around are just like family names and they have a very traditional look and feel. But I think we're trying to invite people who love wine, people who love sensory products, fragrance, et cetera, to do those things together.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about that, because I think we're really interested to know how fragrance came out of the new wine business and what that sort of idea and conversation was like.
I think a lot of what we're doing in both industries is trying to be respectful of tradition, but also, you know, changing things up to invite a new generation. So we always hear this narrative in wine about how the younger generation isn't drinking and it's just not appealing to them. Like the terms are super esoteric. It feels unapproachable. It's expensive, all of those things. And for fragrance, we found that, well, one, the tie between aroma is the key thing. So as we're making the wine and experiencing all of the aromas, like that's the number one aspect to your taste and experience of wine. And everyone interprets that differently. They're going to like different things. They're going to smell different things. And we were really inspired by everything happening in the vineyard in the winemaking process that was related to smell and how strong of memories that evoked for us, and wanted to incorporate those smells into a different product, one that wasn't necessarily derived from the land, but just inspired by the land. And in the same way, bring something new to the category that people hadn't seen before. Again, as a way to invite people to drink wine, but also to maybe feel like they're in a vineyard, even if they're in New York, and just bring that along with them.
I would say that Lord and I are pretty academic in ways. Like, we love history and art and culture. And both of us found that these are two very storied industries that had tremendous rituals that go back centuries. And to us, that's fairly parallel. People have depended on fermented beverages and scent since recorded time, along with art, which we also like embrace. But the connection was really important to us to sort of acknowledge history and tradition. And it's important in humanity, like this continuous thread through humanity, but also like to bring it to people, to make it accessible. And so I think part of what we're doing is trying to push boundaries and make things that have been really important to humanity, like more accessible, more regular, more personal, and more free, more your own. And so we're trying to break down in both categories the barriers that people have to buying scent or buying wine. Like, they have the ability to make you become who you want to become without rules. You should be free to do that. And we feel like both of those industries sort of had rules that we're hoping go away. And then I think a second piece to this is also immediately, and Laura, we didn't talk about it, but we did kind of with the grapes on the crushed grape. Immediately when we started making wine, we would hop off an airplane from San Francisco, do a 2-hour drive. And the minute we got on Dry Creek Road, we would roll down the windows and say, it just smells so differently here. And it was so powerful and freeing and refreshing and invigorating that we thought, yes, we got to make wine, but we also have to make this whole thing a sensory experience, because taking people, what if they don't drink wine? Take them to the scents of the vineyard, which are so unique, and put that in a bottle. So bottling place became sort of an important part of why both.
You touched on something that I think is really interesting, and Sable and I discuss a lot how fragrance has historically and still is can feel very gatekeepy as an industry, no matter sort of who you talk to. And I don't know a ton about the wine industry, but I am assuming that it's very much along the same vein. So how was it launching not only one brand in an industry as such, but two at essentially the same time? Like, what is it like being a newcomer in both industries, which feel very sort of gatekept and heady.
Yeah. I mean, I think ignorance was bliss in a lot of ways. I think being outsiders and disruptors definitely have helped us. I think if we knew everything we knew now, we might have been too scared to do it. I think it was a little crazy to do both at once, but we kind of felt like we had to almost be extreme to make a splash. Both are super gatekeepy. I think, I mean, I'm still intimidated to read a wine list, and I work in wine. Like, I think there is this barrier, especially for the younger generation, that I was really hoping to bridge between the two of us, because I think she has so much lifetime experience with wine. I have less, but I kind of bringing the perspective of like, what would people want here? But yeah, I think it's the development of both were very interesting, because I think you have to decide in both how much tradition you want to uphold and how disruptive you want to be. And I think we've done a good job of balancing that. I will say, so wine has been surprisingly inviting, I think, because at least in our area, people just want more people to drink wine. And the product weren't really replicable. We have a plot of land, like, you know, it produces what it produces. And sure, you can make tweaks, but we're making very minimal intervention wine. And I think people are just excited. Of course, not everyone, but people are just excited to kind of have new energy towards the industry. So that's kind of lovely. I think we're all up against a lot in the wine industry, and people are banding together. I think in fragrance, it's super competitive. It's super crowded. I think it's still pretty gatekeepy. Like, I think unless in wine, there's lots of awards, and I think that's true in fragrance as well. But I think there are a lot of insider tracks to the industry that we are up against. And I think we're finding that our strength is being a vineyard-based brand so close to the wine in a story that people haven't heard before. But yeah, I think they're both really intimidating. So
it's funny too, because Lauren is so right. We have a lot of confidence in ourselves because we study and read a lot and hire people who can advise us. And I think we had confidence maybe beyond what we should have had when we decided to do this together. What really kind of empowered us is seeing how people struggle with just doing what they love and what they like, and not feeling judged, not feeling like, oh, this is the wrong, like I would talk to my children and they're like, oh, I don't want to order wine in a restaurant, or I don't want to have that fragrance because someone might think this or something like that. So I think part of also what, and I can do this more with my age, I think, is I've been around a long time, and you get to a point where like, just express yourself, be independent, do what you love, feel free. Like you don't need to do what other people think. Like, that's our whole find your inner dance, like find your own dance and know that it's good. Because I think what we tried to do and we are doing is we know we're making a really high quality products in both industries. We are very disciplined in doing it all the right way. And so then we want people to say, okay, so just like know that the product's good. And if it feels good to you, you don't have to read the top notes, the hearts, and the link, you know, you don't have to know the dry down. You don't have to know, just like, what do you feel like?
To add to that, I think we found both have a shared language, but it feels like a foreign language to a lot of people who feel like they don't speak the language, they can't enjoy the product, or they don't feel confident enough. And I think one of our other mantras was like something like, you can't drink wine when your mouth is full of adjectives. And I feel that way about fragrance too. It's like a lot of people will tell you, or traditional wine tasting experiences don't allow any fragrances in the room. They kind of want you to be in a vacuum. And for us, that's not real life. And we're trying to create these products for real people in real life who enjoy the multi-sensory and don't want to be sort of told how to think about it. I don't know.
Yeah, we're kind of the first, we think, as because people have told us that we're doing, where we actually are having people try the wine and then spray the fragrance and tell us how they impact them, how they relate, like what they would want to do together. And we're pretty excited about that, because when Lauren and I used to go to wine tastings and ask people, like, can we bring our fragrance? They'd say, oh, you know, we don't mix. And we thought, wait, every hotel, every restaurant has a scent handle, you know, like think of the French who have scents in every part of their existence. It's part of the overall experience that people have enjoying and connecting with one another. So that's another, like marrying these two is also been something we're we really want people to, it's like, that's a newness, I think, that we're building, is that these things are connected. They connect you, and you can experience them both together in unique ways.
Yeah, I feel like both industries felt like they had like an older French gentleman at the door, like, you shall not pass. And we were like, hello, we're here.
Right.
Yeah, the perfumes are definitely like, I mean, even the names and the design, they're very fun and welcoming. I don't get the sense that they're talking down to you at all. Or they're not trying to seem, you know, fancier or more premium than whatever. But let's talk about the three scents, because they're all based on the vineyard and winemaking. Like, how did you come up with these three concepts?
Yeah. So the original, we had three like loose ideas. One was around my mom's favorite time and inspiration. So springtime in the vineyard, a lot of the citrus groves and the citrus smells, and really a beautiful time on the vineyard, which is bud break and flowering of the vines. So when they're just starting to grow buds and become grapes. So Gnarly Vines is very much an interpretation of both spring, and also we have what are called old vines on the property, and they are super gnarly. And there's a visual interpretation of that in the text as well, but that one is very inspired by the vines. Scorched Wood is inspired by a few different concepts, but we really wanted to create something as an ode to the redwood trees, which are so iconic. We have them on our estate and the property. They're super resilient. Obviously, California is a place that has a lot of wildfires, and redwoods have endured for a long time. There's also a concept in winemaking. We age our wine in barrels, and they always toast the barrels. And set them on fire, and there's a lot of smoke. There's a lot of smoke in what we do. And we kind of wanted to recapture some positivity, I guess, around that, and also just make it more of an ode to resilience. So that one is really an ode to the trees and the smoke and the grit and leather and all of the hard parts of farming and earth, I think, out there. Like, it's very much kind of our out west scent. And it also has a little bit of booze. It's got some rum and some orange. So it's a little bit of an old fashioned. So that one's just kind of our hard farmer. Like, I don't know. That's how I think about it. Or like campfire. It's whatever you want to associate, I think you can, with scorched wood. And then Midnight Crush was probably the hardest for us to formulate and decide on, because we really wanted to do something inspired by wine and the grape and the winemaking process, but not be too on the nose and not do no wine scent. So crush is a colloquial term for harvest. When you crush the grapes, it often happens at midnight or in the middle of the night. They come in with flashlights and they like do it by hand. It's a really beautiful process. So this one is really an ode to that. And again, we wanted to kind of have something with a bit of that damp and petrichor and rotting essence, but not in a gross way. So we tried to think of this one, and the working name was once cave, actually, but as when you walk into a wine cave. Ooh. So there's a little bit of damp undertones, which we also get a lot in the area with the fog, and that's just a part of our life there. And then you have the like stewed fruit, so stone fruits. So there's like a lot of sweetness, and then there's like a honeyed oak note that is an ode to the barrel. So that one is really a love letter to wine.
That one is especially wine forward. I mean, I know, like, not to state the absolute obvious, but I wasn't sure what to expect. And when I sprayed it on, I was like, oh, damn. But it's not, it's like still very approachable. And I don't want to say wearable, but it's smooth in a way that I wasn't expecting, like a more wine.
Yeah, that one's interesting with its audience too, because I think it's, in some ways, it's our sweetest. I mean, I think all of them have a sweetness to them, but it's the most on the nose grape or fruit forward. And so the more youthful audience too, I think it's a really playful one, but it also has like a lot of sophistication. And I think over time, as you continue to wear it and the kind of fade into the background, you get a little bit more of that like KV vibe.
We thought of it too, as since like we started with, we want to make sure we capture what happens, you know, in a cycle, because we always talk about a cycle comes and ends and never is repeated. And, you know, on a vineyard, like the weather's different all the time, and things happen differently all the time. So we also thought of it that way. Like, let's start with what you experience in the springtime with the hope and the sun and of early spring and then move into, you know, when's what you have to deal with the summer with work and the farming and the leather and just the smoke. And then you get time of harvest and just joy of like the richness and uniqueness of what it is to sort
and the
of,
product.
And yeah. the product. Yeah.
And product. And
it was kind of like, we also knew that, you know, Gnarly Vines was sort of tradition with a twist. And I think we also knew that Midnight Crush was sort of the most new. Like, we really wanted to formulate something entirely new and specific to what we were doing. And I think it was riskier in a way because, you know, having a grape scent, like early iterations of it, like, whoa, no, it smells like grape candy. Like, no, that, you know, that's not what we're doing here. So I think it was the hardest to formulate also to get that balance between sweet and really earthy and musky, but have the musky part not be too wet, right? It was the trickiest scent, I think, to be like, oh, we got it.
That's so interesting that the one that is sort of arguably closest to wine itself was the hardest to get right. Yeah.
That's a great parallel. It was so, so hard. Like, there was a little bit too much fog sometimes, or a little bit too much grape. And like, we get that a lot with our wine, like a little too sweet, a little too much, you know, add acid, you know,
little peppery, little this. In each of the scents, it's intentionally grounded in the earth, like different types of earth in each one. But you know, the first one, Gnarly Vines, is sort of more herbal in a way, because that to us is what happens a little bit with spring and flowers. And then you get, you know, sort of the leaves and everything with the scorched wood in it, that you get the moss and the wet herb with Midnight Crush. And we were, I would say, honestly, when we first started, if you look back at some of our early promotion and marketing, we were a little afraid to lean too hard into the fact that these were meant to evoke the vineyard. We thought, let's just have novel new scents that we love and see. And then we are now more and more comfortable with, we have a single estate that does something really unique in the world. Like, Dry Creek Valley in the world is this unique climate and microculture. I mean, things happen there with fog and ocean and sun that just happen, as you guys know, like, just in few parts of the world can you make wine like they do in that part of the country. And so we thought, we got to bottle that. How do we make people like experience that the way we do? So,
and did you work with anyone on the scent creation?
So we worked with Frederick Bouchardi of
Brooklyn.
We were like, I mean, we talked to some other perfumers too, and it was the same way we felt about the wine. Like, some of them were just too traditional. And he, I think, has done some really, really interesting things. Like, he's always so outside of the box. And he really let us play the whole process. He didn't even tell us what we were smelling. We would just
but too much of that, too little of that.
Yeah. So I think, you know, with both the wine, and always have this strong vision, but because we're outsiders, we need experts to help us.
Yeah, and super creative. That was really important to us too. We went to a lot of what, you know, sort of traditional perfumiers. And you're like, we want to do this. Like, are you comfortable being our mad chemist with, you know, your knowledge of chemistry? And we would go into his little room, and it's like, too powdery. No, too herbal. No, too this. And he would always say to us, I'm not going to tell you. We're like, what is that? He goes, I'm not telling you. I'm just going to do another iteration. I know what you want. And it was really fun, really fun creative process, honestly, working with him. And he was a good choice for us.
He is so intuitive in ways, because he works with so many different brands and with so many different, you know, versions of IP, whatever that is, and for him at the time. But I feel like all of the work that I've smelled that he's done for other people or brands or whatever it is, it feels so exactly sort of maybe not what I expected from them, but it feels like a scent that they would put out, and not sort of the same perfumer doing his own work under all of these umbrellas. You know, he is such a good chameleon in that way, I find.
He so is. He did just like intuit the feeling that we wanted from those three concepts, like redwood, moving, and vine. And I completely agree. I think some people we met with were like, well, my name needs to go here, and this is my name for. And we're like, that's just not what we're trying to do. I respect that, but it's not us. And he really was able to just like translate exactly what you're looking for and what we didn't know we needed, you know?
Yeah. And I think I think the overall, the brand, that's sort of what we're all about, is I think Lauren and I together generationally have a very keen sense of the moment and what we're trying to do, what we're trying to say. And I think the magic is the team for us. People ask us, how'd you get in the libraries? How'd you get in the frame? It's like, we sort of know how to find people who can execute our vision and are wonderful to work with. And I feel that kind of across the board. Like, we, you know, we have that with our winemaker, with our farmer, we have that with Joya, we have that with our marketing team, our creative team. Like, we have a group of people that we surround ourselves with who listen and know how to express in a way that's completely aligned to it. What we're trying to do, we're trying to move the needle. Like, I would say that's the biggest, we're trying to evolve. In this little duo here, we're trying to push, you know, we're trying to push the boundary a little bit and bring something new and relevant and timely, you know, like it, I think that's the lucky part for us is people wanting real in nature, sustainability and real people, real things from a real place. That's just kind of luck. But we apply on top of that, like our vision of self-expression and independence and human creativity over time. And I think that like marrying those things has been really fun to see it resonate. It resonates on so many levels. It's really fun to see.
I'm curious to know, wine and fragrance, I think we've discussed, have so many parallels of they're super sensorial and memory making, and they each have their own sort of notes. So there's a lot of similarities, but we'd love to know how you found wine and fragrance are different and maybe some of their biggest differences between the two.
Yeah, definitely. So I think one of the key differences I think we've found is they are sort of skewed in their audience. So I would say everyone loves the brand and the products, but wine still knows into a bit of an older age demographic and bracket of our consumer. The fragrances, interestingly, are in a younger demographic. And I think that really just speaks to like our generational behaviors. I think it's really cool that the younger generation is being more experimental with fragrance. They're collecting unique fragrances, different fragrances, whereas like my mom, I think her friends are used to having one signature scent, and that's kind of what they've known. I've been finding that, interestingly, you know, it's the younger generation that's really like pushing this innovation in fragrance. Wine, I think still, I think there's a lot of talk about people not drinking as much, but I think it just, it's one of those things where your taste still evolves with time. And I just think it's, yeah, it's a product that skews towards an older audience, but that's why I think it's really fun that we have both perspectives. And then I think there's also the obvious, like wine pretty much have no control about it. It happens once a year. You know, if you're lucky, bad things have happened.
Yeah.
You kind of get what you get in terms of weather, and then you can tweak later, but it's really out of control, which is scary, you know, as a business. Fragrance, it's a much more controlled product and it's a lot easier to make. I mean, I think it's hard to make something that people like always and for people to buy it, but yeah, wine is just very, very hard product to produce. You're kind of just at the whim of nature, really.
I don't like that at all. I hate risk.
Oh my God. Every year there's like, we get a call from the farmer being like, there's a new like list, or like there's a, you know, it's too hot. We have to do it now. Like it's just, there's always a crisis. Like really. Well, it's, yeah, you're just on the edge of your heat the whole time. And fragrance has a lot of other challenges, but it's stable. Always. So
it's really interesting also what Lauren and I have discovered is we thought there we could create a lot of synergies very quickly between the two, and we're finding that we have to make the synergies because we can afford wine is, even though the price point is not that dissimilar, the behavior is really dissimilar. People are willing to try wine very freely, to like, dislike, buy it again, not buy it again. The people are not so willing to do that with fragrance. And they look a lot longer. They study a lot longer. They need more reinforcement, more marketing, more influence. Like where with wine, people are, it's very interesting. They are open somehow to experimenting it to us anyway, much more than they are with fragrance. And that's something we're trying to like, how do we talk to them? How do we get them to understand that it isn't like it's an experience. It's like an outing. It's the moment that you're going to have with this fragrance or that fragrance is very much like sharing a bottle of wine with your friends. It can come and go. It's not your life's, it's not a life commitment or And so we're needing to find the language to have people interact with fragrance and experience it in the way.
But like wine, we're not saying you got to drink that every day. And I think with fragrance too, like, we're not necessarily trying to replace all your scents. I think we want to invite you to play and to like have a different experience, right?
Yeah. I think one of them gets you drunk and the other one doesn't. So I think it's like
a lot of some of these sip and scents, we've had people who don't drink alcohol want to smell the fragrance. And Lauren and I thought about, like, everyone always asks, why don't you do a non-alcoholic, like the new thing? It's like, well, it's very difficult actually. But we thought maybe fragrance is our non-alcoholic, like, wine, because it came up a couple times with people we invited to these events. Like, I feel it. I feel the same mood, and I don't have to drink. So anyway, that's something we've been playing with a little bit too.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. I think one could definitely sub up for the other, you know? Yeah. I like the wine though. I guess the last one that we can go out on, wine and fragrance are, you know, like we talked about, inherently sensorial and very personal. And I find it interesting that you both gravitated toward each of them sort of at the same time. So what do you think about your pairing makes you gravitate toward these very sort of personal experiential products that people also have very discerning and specific and, you know, powerful opinions about?
It's such an interesting question. I think it was a little bit of timing. I had worked a lot of corporate jobs and stuff like that too during COVID. And I think we were like, I wanted to build something that mattered and that people could really experience in a lifetime. And I think you felt similarly. We're at very different periods in our careers and lives, but we both, I think, had this yearning to create something real that people would talk about and consume and that we could share. So that was one of the things. And I think we dabble in the subjectivity a lot in our passions. Like I mentioned, we have a ton of art. That's one of our big passions. I think we're not scared to form an opinion, and we're creating products where we want you to form an opinion. And I think it's okay if the opinions differ. I think it's not about polarizing opinions. It's about diversity of opinions. And I think it was the same concept as that painting I mentioned, where everyone is so different. You're almost like, these people aren't in the same painting, but they're all dancing together. And I think we're really interested in like the individual experience of life in these products. But in the greater sense, both of these things really are superhuman and are meant to bring you together. And I don't know. I think that's pretty beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, I think also for us, like, storytelling is very much a part. Like, Lauren didn't reveal this, but she was a creative writer as her major in college. And I think storytelling is as a power of the human experience is really important to us. And I think both of these categories allow us to do incredible storytelling that's very real. And it's a larger story for us. Your Inner Dance is a story. The whole history of wine and soil and build, you know, like growing something is a story, and fragrance, mood and scent and memory. Like, they're just the connection, the bridging of all these sensory experiences into the bigger story. It's inspirational and kind of exciting to us all the time. I feel, and this is kind of weird, I feel like these products sort of allow us to speak to something bigger than ourselves. Is that weird? Like, I feel like that when I go, like, we're both very into art. Like, when you go to a museum and you see like this incredible painting, you actually can feel some like real emotions and some physical reactions to it. And I feel like both of these products have the potential to elevate the human experience, and our ability to bridge them for a bigger story is like kind of what we're after.
One of them said, she was like, and this one's got a little sweetness to it. And all I could think of was that Keke Palmer meme.
This one has a little sweetness to it.
Yeah, it's really cool hearing about how the scents were created. Also now knowing that Frederick was behind them, I was like, oh, of course. Mm-hmm. I totally get the mischievously playful vibe.
Yeah, makes total sense. I don't know. You know, fragrance, wine, the parallels. I was trying, we were trying not to ask like the most obvious questions, but I think it's interesting to be new, not only to one industry, but to both. I'm like, I do not envy you, but it seems like they're doing just fine.
I know, so. Doing it at the sort of the same time. I was like, damn, all right.
Yeah.
I like that idea of just like being scared, or rather not knowing that you're scared to do something. So you're just like, let me try this.
I'm like, that's how you should do things.
Yeah, I mean,
I think that's the only way you're going to do things.
Literally, I mean,
don't overthink it.
I mean, like I said, ignorance is bliss. You don't know what you don't know. And if you did, you probably wouldn't do it. So,
yeah,
you know, I guess just got to keep that in the forefront of your mind whenever you're doing anything new. As someone who operates out of 100% fear at all times.
I do think, yeah, there is a fine line between thinking it through enough to execute it well, but not overthinking it where it paralyzes you in fear.
Yep. No, totally, totally. Oh, it's so cool. Like I said, having been out in Napa for 2 seconds, it's just, I cannot imagine owning a vineyard and living on a vineyard. And it's just so beautiful. I'm sure it's also very fucking hard. So it's like,
yeah,
in that same way, I'm like, I'll leave that to you. But I mean,
I've only been there once, like 2 summers ago. And dude, it is hot. Like, it's kind of a desert. So it's like 110 degrees in the daytime. And I'm like, I don't want to be anywhere.
Yeah,
like,
right. Right. Exactly.
Like walking at the equivalent of one block, you're just like spent.
Right.
Scary.
We should add Sonoma to our Smelly Little World tour.
Yeah. Also, like when she was saying how people who don't drink can enjoy the fragrances, I'm like, me.
I'm like, I'll
more
drink her
activities
wine.
Activities for me, please.
Right.
I'll eat the cheese. I'll eat the cheese and the grapes and the crackers. I love that.
You could lead the wine tasting.
Yeah. Or like, don't people like spit it out?
I think that's some god tier level shit.
Yeah. Which
I was not spitting out, let me tell you that.
Something feels very like uncouth about that.
Right.
Just to taste it and spit it out. I'm like, no.
No one needs to see me spit anything, please. We're going into some weird territory. Thank you to Lauren and Cynthia for joining us today. Can't wait to see what they do next. I'm like, where do you go from here, you know?
I kind of want them to do almost like a red wine communion scent. Like a really, really literal red wine kind of scent. I don't know. That's right.
I can tell your ass is not Catholic because if you would never say shit like that. But I support you and I support the art of triggering,
which is why I will say something like that. Like truly the only time I really have ever had wine was like I grew up going to a Lutheran church, but we still did the whole, what is it called, body of Christ shed for you, blah blah blah, what is that,
the Eucharist.
The Eucharist. What's that thing called where you get the little cracker? Well, it was always like early Sunday morning and I would wake up at the last possible minute so I wouldn't eat breakfast and I'd be so hungry and they're like, have a wafer, and I was like, give it to me. I think we would dip the wafer in the wine. So the flavor of like church wine, which to me just is what all red wine tastes like. It just, I think of church.
Who has that?
Yeah.
Who has that?
I know.
And so does a raconteur.
Yeah. Well, another one then.
Another one.
Why not? Why not?
Why not?
Why not? Ha ha.
All right. Well, until next time, you can check us out on our website, smellyoulater.live, where you can leave us a voice note. You can shop our very cozy merch. You can follow us on Instagram at smellyoulater.mp3. I'm at Tynan Buck.
And I'm at Sabletooth Tigra.
And until next time, we will
smell you later.